Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Monday Night Raw.
Oh, now can you hear me, Tom?
Yes.
Oh, somehow I clicked the mute button. That hasn't happened. Tom, what do you consider the main event of Extreme Rules on Sunday? And you can pick a SmackDown match if you like. Obviously, the ones they hyped in particular on Raw tonight were are more prominent on our mind. Because to me, it feels like a bit of an ensemble show with a few matches in contention.
Very good question. Between two Raw matches, and it probably comes down to what the finish is going to be. It feels like it's either Fight Pit or it's the ladder match. I think Fight Pit, it doesn't feel like a main event program, but this particular match feels like it could headline with the novelty of, sure, they're bringing in Daniel Cormier, but especially the novelty of this cage structure that they've never used on the main roster before, and just the duration of the Riddle Rollins feud. But the women's match, even though the build hasn't been, stellar, it feels significant, and a certain peripheral character to it feels like they could be tied into this whole White Rabbit thing. So if that is where we are going to see a significant furthering rather than just another clue, than her Alexa Bliss's involvement in that match, potential involvement in that match, could be a good way to end the show.
Yeah, I won't be. I think those are the two top candidates. And I don't think the Brawling Brutes against Imperium in a six-man tag is going to main event the show. And as big of a star as Drew McIntyre is, and the fact that they're both, have talked about Roman Reigns being in their sightlines, I don't see that headlining. Ronda Rousey's a big star. The biggest star on this show, if you look at her paychecks and her history, just in WWE and otherwise. So, I wouldn't rule that out, that they end with that. But the Fight Pit match is the one that's the most elaborate to set up. And I don't know if it's easier to build it or tear it down, or do you think they're going to have it set up somewhere else other than in the center of the arena? I hadn't really even put thought into that.
Yeah, good question. I enjoy thinking about that kind of thing in the context of NXT, because it is a bit more of a logic puzzle, setting up a cage during a... They've had like three or four different ways that they've set up cages over the course of NXT, just in a small room. Is it a live show? Are they going to do it during commercial break? Is it taped and it matters less? For both Fight Pit matches thus far, let's see, was one... Oh, see, now I'm getting hazy. I think one may have still been at Full Sail, and then the other was at the Performance Center, and they just had the Fight Pit just sort of, the cage itself took up a different space that they don't generally use as much except for bleachers. So it was a different setup. They for neither match did they have a live crowd there. So I think that it's probably something that could be lowered. I wouldn't imagine that it's as heavy as an Elimination Chamber, so it's probably easier to suspend.
Yeah, I'm kind of now curious about the logistics of it now that I'm thinking about it. So getting back on track, though, Edge and Finn Balor doesn't feel like that would main event, but Edge is in contention for the biggest star on this show. I mean, obviously, I think a lot of people would rate him a bigger star than Drew McIntyre or Ronda Rousey or Seth Rollins or Matt Riddle, on and on. So that's there, but I don't see Finn Balor and Edge in an I Quit match being the final match on the show. So that's where it does, I think, come down to either, and it might be logistics that are a tiebreaker here, but maybe the Fight Pit match or else Belair and Bayley. And that kind of, I figured it'd round out to the most likely being Belair and Bayley, or at least maybe the most deserving, because it's a women's singles title match, and the men's world champion is not defending the title on this show, barring a big surprise on Friday SmackDown. And it has a ladder, and it's a ladder match. And it got the majority of the focus on this episode of Raw, and certainly was, you know, the big angle at the end of Raw to close out the show. Now, fewer people are watching in the third hour than are watching otherwise. So, you know, it isn't necessarily the most prestigious spot to be in, but the symbolism of it kind of made me think maybe they're going to headline with that. What did you think of the contract signing and then the angle after the main event singles match involving the interested and involved parties?
Yeah, briefly, it does occur to me that if it does come down, if the format does come down to logistics, taking their time to assemble the cage prior to the show and then opening with that match and then swiftly disassembling it, which they would have practiced at and had, you know, they'd have a team of officials that would be swift at doing that. That could be a logistical choice. For as much as we have I criticized Bayley for not really rising to our expectations of her return, admittedly lofty ones because, we, you know, so many of us think so highly of her. I thought the contract signing segment was a success tonight, all on her shoulders, because it's not often that we see someone, and for as great as the bubbly Bayley character was, I would argue that Bayley has been more prominent as this newer version of her character during the pandemic era and now. So this is more what I feel has the potential of being the lasting impression of her potential. But it's rare that we see someone so rooted in a phase of their career, their character, their presentation, really harken back to the details and specifics of a prior incarnation rather than either acting like it didn't exist at all, or at least that it's, you know, total past and not connected to who they are now. So the way that Bayley brought all of that back and just got really, really specific about it in relation to not just why she wanted this match and where her head is at, but also in relation to her opponent and how Bianca, in a sense, to her represents that older version of Bayley that she perhaps is still trying to slice down the way she sliced down her inflatable Bayley buddies. That really was a nice capstone in the build here to me. Like, I didn't even need, I don't know, the visual with the titles on the ladder was nice, but I didn't even really need all the rose plants at the end or anything. That almost lowered the energy a bit. I thought the contract signing was a good move for what has been a lackluster build.
Yeah, a few things there. One, and this is just a small point, it seemed like they had about 20 extra seconds to fill before they got to the striking a pose on the ladder, and everyone was just sort of standing around like, oh, yeah, we're still on the air, but I don't want to stand on the ladder for 45 seconds. I only want to stand on the ladder for 10 seconds before we go out the air. So we have to kind of regroup and fill another 20, 30 seconds with the beatdown. I thought it lost some of the crescendo and momentum because it did seem like they were trying to get to a time cue. So I put that out there as one critique. I did like the idea of Bayley explaining her jealousy of Belair making it to the top quicker than she did. I thought Belair had a solid comeback, which is that original Bayley wasn't you. This is the authentic you. I would have gone with that and stopped before I talked up, self-bragged that I have a bond with the fans because I'm authentic and the fans connect with me because of that. I would have edited that out. I thought, one, it's sort of implied, but two, I don't believe that Bianca Belair talks and acts like that when the cameras aren't on. I just don't. I think her speech is very affected. It's very gimmicky. She leans into a few things that she does over and over. So this idea that, you know, like the camera showed her like strutting backstage. It's like, there's no way she walks around just strutting like that. But she wasn't acknowledging the camera. It was just like, hey, look, we caught her in a candid moment strutting backstage. It's frankly ridiculous looking. And the whole twirling the braid is fine as sort of like, hey, this is what I do when I make my ring entrance. But when you sit down for a contract signing, I just want to feel like it's the real person talking, the one that if you happen to get seated at a restaurant next to her and she was in a passionate conversation, that's what she'd sound like. And I didn't hear that. So, again, I wish they would let Bianca Belair be Bianca Belair as opposed to this character. And it's normally sort of like, I don't like it. But when you literally watch her brag about being authentic when she's not, after accusing Bayley of not being authentic, to me that was a weak spot. And it's still the area where there's the most room for improvement, I think, in Bayley and Belair actually connecting with the audience, because I think the audience is still searching for more authentic moments with Belair.
Yeah, and my putting the success of the segment all on Bayley's shoulders, the unspoken part of that is that I was not impressed with Belair here, which is unfortunate. I am more forgiving of her typically than you are. I know I've heard you criticize her speaking in mannerisms in the same way in the past, and sometimes I'm just thinking, well, come on, Wade, there's really something to the fact that she always comes off as so confident. I think her fans look for that in her and see it as a strength even in the face of so much adversity. But it can be hit and miss, and unfortunately tonight it was a miss. It felt like she had, you know, had a couple hours to memorize a script, and she was out there doing her best to recite it, and unfortunately it didn't end up being her best.
Yeah, I feel like she has like words that come between signature mannerisms and catchphrases and sayings and platitudes, but the connective tissue is just doesn't feel authentic to me, because it feels like it's just sort of filler until she gets to the thing that she does to the beat of how she says it every single time the same way. And that's not how she is on, you know, just regular media interviews. And that's where she is a star. So I know I say this a lot, but this was a really good example of it. I wish she could have just talked freely about Bayley and rebutted her claims and pointed out her hypocrisy, and done so in a way that didn't lean so heavily on some of those same mannerisms. All right, well, let's pause and introduce the show formally, and then we'll get to other topics and phone calls and emails. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Monday, October 3rd, 2022. And I'm Wade Keller, the editor, publisher, and founder of Pro Wrestling Torch, including the long-running Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter and the website pwtorch.com. I also host a variety of podcasts throughout the week, including the Wade Keller podcast and post shows, and some VIP shows like the Wade Keller Hotline, post-pay-per-view and PLE, post-event roundtables, The Fix with Todd Martin, Everything with Rich Fan, and more. And the other voice you hear on today's show is Tom Stout from pwtorch.com, or PW Torch. He does a variety of podcasts over the years for PW Torch, including a regular part of PWT Talks NXT for a very long time, now part of a couple other podcasts that I'm going to throw to you, Tom, to plug right now. Tell people about your VIP exclusive content.
Thank you so much. Yes, Kelly Wells and I do NXT 8 years back, which is exactly what it sounds like. And right now the new episode in the feed is discussing Tyson Kidd's final NXT championship match, as well as Bayley on the rise. Bayley wrestled, who did she wrestle on the show? I remember thinking it was a good match. Bayley's journey is picking up steam 8 years back. And so we're talking about that every single week on PW Torch VIP. I also do the monthly podcast Bonus Point, which mainly through the NXT show Level Up, the preliminary show that features matches with wrestlers that haven't quite made it to the main television program yet, for the most part, although there are some appearances for more recognizable names, primarily filtered through that. But it's really a WWE developmental podcast, the analysis of the wrestlers as they are working things out, and some news from the month. I the last episode, the most recent episode, just came out yesterday. Due to the hurricane, I did have to record it not quite a week early, but early enough that by the time it aired, I was like, ooh, this and this are outdated. Shoot. Which, that's not how I should try to sell the show. Sit me for the month until I can, you know, record again and clean those up. But I will say, for 2 months in a row now, I have had some information on Bonus Point that I have not seen anywhere else, particularly relevant to the Coconut Loop live events and some newer talent that are appearing on them. Nobody else seems to know who they are, but when I read the reports, I'm like, ooh, I'm connecting some dots. And if you listen to, you can find out exactly who those people are.
So GoVIP people, lots of VIP exclusive benefits, podcasts throughout the week, and tons of archives. Full details at pwtorch.com/GoVIP. All right, Tom, let's shift to inviting our listeners to call and email. If you're live streaming the show here on Monday night, you are invited to call us. The number is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. When you call push 1 on your keypad, that flags you on our switchboard so that we know you want to be brought onto the show. Otherwise, you can just call and listen and decide as you go if you want to join the show. You can also email us at wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. That's wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. All right, let's go to our first call. It'll be David in Farmington, New York. David, thanks for calling. What's on your mind tonight about Raw?
Well, hi, guys. I am looking forward to Extreme Rules, but to be honest, this show didn't do much towards that end. I thought the final segment was good, and I know that Damage Control, I think they had to look really strong, and I think they did look strong tonight. I'm not quite as down on Bianca's mannerisms as you are, but I do think there is a time and a place for it, and I think she could have toned it down a little bit tonight during the contract signing segment. But the other thing is the Riddle-Rollins face-off didn't really do much for me either. And by the way, the so-called fan footage that they showed that some fan apparently caught on a cell phone, that fan must have been in five different places at once because they had about five different camera angles of it. So that was a nice trick. The other thing I wanted to say is, and I guess it may be too early to say I told you so, but last week I was just talking about the possibility of AJ Styles joining Judgment Day, and that kind of looked like a step in that direction tonight. What do you think?
Yeah, Tom, I'm glad that David brought that up. I think one of the more compelling angles or twists in the show was the fact that they – took me from going, there's no way anyone would buy AJ Styles joining Judgment Day, to creating a believable, maybe I'm too empathetic with Styles over this, but Styles, you can imagine Styles being upset with Rey. You can debate whether it's reasonable or not, because obviously, you know, Rey's relationship with his son might seem more important than just a match on TV on any given week. But he did leave Styles alone in the ring while worrying about Dominic and Ripley, and that led to him not overreacting. Well, I shouldn't say not overreacting. That's in the eye of the beholder, but reacting negatively to Rey and kind of pushing him aside, and then not coming to help him after the and then Rey didn't come back to help him as a result after the post-match attack, which Styles could also use against him. I still don't think Styles is going to join, but I think they created a scenario that felt natural given the kind of course that Ray's been on, where you would think, yeah, I could see why Ray acted that way, and I get it, and I can see why Styles reacted the way that he did, and now I worry maybe AJ will join Finn Balor because he got beat down and nobody came out to save him, and so maybe Styles will believe he's better off running with a group than alone. Tom, what do you think of that angle, and are you any more where were you before tonight, and how are you in terms of the odds of Styles actually succumbing to Balor's persistent overtures?
Yeah, both storylines you bring up, David, I think it's interesting that they are being told with dynamic overlaps with other stories. We've got Rollins and Riddle overlapping with Bobby Lashley's United States title reign, and this one with Rey's conflict. And, you know, Edge and Rey's conflict with Judgment Day was already tied together, but here we've got AJ and Rey's separate conflicts with Judgment Day overlapping in, yeah, a very natural and intriguing way. And, you know, I think it was pretty – I think AJ played it well to where anyone who might have thought that shoving Rey down and the close-up on Rey's distraught face meant instant heel turn, I think AJ and of course he got beat up right afterward by the actual heels. But I think that he played it in such a way where it was more interesting and more of an exhibition that Judgment Day is getting in his head more than maybe even he realized. And so it does leave us wondering, yes, I did go into this sort of thinking like, well, you know, it's almost silly that the invitation to join is even part of this, because it's just not believable. Like, I guess if you were to put something like that on the line as a stipulation in a match, then maybe you have something so we can invest in just for the course of that one match. But just as something Finn is saying, I'm not to the point of believing it yet until now, when I am thinking like, oh, how in his head are they? And if he does join, which I am now considering a possibility, is it less maybe what you're suggesting, and more just he finds himself at the end of his rope and he doesn't see any other way forward other than to just relent and be like, all right, fine, I'll join you guys. I'll wear your t-shirt.
What do you want to happen? Like, what's better just as a viewer storyline wise for all the characters involved?
I don't want AJ to join because I don't want Judgment Day to just inflate to comical proportions. They already dominate so much of the show. And, you know, it's been better lately. It still kind of has a stink around it where there were months where, I guess I'll be generous and say that it was hit and miss, because it wasn't like it was rotten every week. But for the most part, I just wasn't into the Judgment Day thing. For as much as I do individually like Damian Priest and Rhea Ripley, and Rhea Ripley could be a major, major star for this company. But, you know, I've never been huge on Balor, and just the whole thing that we've discussed, and I won't air it all out again. It still is lingering. It's just like, I'm not too psyched about these guys. But then, you know, the Rey Dominic storyline and the whole Edge thing has been one of the more compelling narratives on the show. It's just when you get something like we had last week, when it really is like the Judgment Day edition of Monday Night Raw, it gets to feel like a bit much. So I don't feel like I would want to add another person to the fray unless it was – and maybe I'm selling them short and they would have something really interesting for AJ. But I feel like it's got to be really interesting and they've got to know exactly what it's leading to. For example, if the Dominic feud out to WrestleMania, they could do something where Rey says, you know, I really want to fix this. Dom, what if I joined your group? What if I tried that? And they let him in. And so there was like a 2 or 3 month period of Rey actually being a member, which sounds weird, but I'm just trying to like think about what could possibly be a more interesting way to introduce a new member. Cause yeah, I just don't want it to become like NWO ish.
Yeah. But I mean, it's a group that some would say could use some other elements to keep it interesting.
Fair.
You know, yeah, week to week. I mean, I'm higher on it than most, but I get that people be like, yeah, I don't want just those three just saying the same thing indefinitely. Let's shake things up. David, back to you for any follow-up or additional topic.
Yeah, talking about groups, let's touch on the Bloodline just a little bit here. I really enjoyed the backstage segment with everyone kind of joking around. You know, Solo even got a little bit of a grin on his face, and all of a sudden Jay comes in looking all sour and you know, just being Jay with the friction between him and Sami Zayn. But I sit here and I wonder where they are going with this. I can't help but wonder where they're going with the Bloodline storyline here, because there are so many possibilities. I mean, I think we talked about the possibility of Sammy and Kevin eventually teaming together against the Usos, but it almost seems like they're kind of portraying Jay as an outsider here now. So what's your opinion on that? Where do you think they're going with this Bloodline storyline with those four people in particular?
I was most intrigued by Solo seeming not upset and irritated, but sort of just tolerant of Sammy and Jimmy sharing a funny story. I wouldn't expect Solo to be up laughing and gregarious, but the way they shot him, it was the first time that I felt like Solo might be sort of seeing Jay's side of things, and I don't know if that's what they were going for. Tom, what do you think?
Yeah, I noticed that as well, and last time you and I talked about the Bloodline, I said, you know, it was in the context of someone saying there was a Roman Reigns problem, and I said, no, I think there's an Usos problem, because they're getting kind of dull. Well, all of this Sami Zayn stuff with each of them and now Solo seeming to feel a completely different way about Sami and how Reigns is responding to Sami has made it so much more interesting. You know, without diving into too much detail about what is primarily a SmackDown storyline, I'll just say that I think it was heading into Money in the Bank that I told you this isn't going to happen, but I really want Sammy to win it, and he won't even look at it as a way to win the belts for himself. He'll look at it as, hey, Tribal Chief, look what I got for you, so now nobody else will be able to try to pin you with this. Yeah. But every single time Roman's down and Sammy's at ringside, you're watching him with that briefcase and you're wondering. And so now it's not in the context of the briefcase, but I still am just hoping. You know, Sammy's playing this in such a way where I genuinely believe that he – brainwashed isn't the word, but if he's brainwashed himself, just if you'll take my meaning, like I genuinely believe that he is being earnest here. But something's got to happen where he's going to wake up to it. And I just – he doesn't even need to win the title. I just want it to culminate in a singles match between he and Roman that preferably is big enough that it can happen at a premium live event. I just, you know, Sammy, I think a lot of us believe that Sammy has that in him to absolutely make that a big enough story, even in a loss. And then, yeah, sure, if Kevin Owens is still in that orbit and in that alignment, then I think there absolutely is a path forward, you know, and sure, they could take on the Usos. But the main thing I'm personally looking for is Sammy versus Roman.
I think that's going to be a huge moment for WWE in 2023. I love when seeds are planted and they're harvested way down the line. And you're seeing more of that, I think, with Paul Levesque than before with Vince McMahon in terms of, yeah, we got our eye on this, we got our eye on this, we got our eye on this. Not that Vince didn't do it, but I'm enjoying that. And I think it's one of the reasons where even if there's a week here or a show there or a series of match finishes that upset us, I still don't think, you know, there's a real way to evaluate Paul Levesque's booking until we see at least into next summer, really, because, you know, he's going to be plotting out WrestleMania, but he's also going to be thinking about what happens after that and what chips to save and to play post WrestleMania. What do you think? And this is perhaps at risk of being a very long answer. So I'm not necessarily going for that, but we've got David on the line, Tom, but do you think Paul Levesque has a tendency based on his history of booking NXT, overseeing NXT, to plant seeds and plan for, you know, multiple matches ahead for his top stars more than Vince McMahon did? Does that jump out to you as a trait or not really?
I'm short answer, yes, because most of NXT's history was taped, and so that's what they had to do. But since it's what he had to do, he excelled at it. And, of course, you know, team of writers and everything, but he was the last guy signing off on it. So yes, in that regard, but I think what he will do, and I believe there is absolutely a history of this when you look back even early on in NXT, is that he will plant seeds and he will water them. But sometimes the fruit just dies on the vine. And that's okay because he's watering multiple plants at a time. So if Mustafa Ali, having so much heart that he won't go down until he finally passes out, is something that crowds respond to, then maybe it goes somewhere. But if the ceiling just seems to be, okay, Mustafa Ali is just a good enhancement guy, then that's fine. There are other plants that are being watered.
Yep. Okay, David, back to you.
Yeah, interesting points there. I guess I have one final question here and or point to make, but going back to damage control here with the beat down at the end there and you know, the posing on the ladder, which I did think was a cool way to end the show. You know, Bianca's been a solid champion. When she comes out, you know, despite her, you know, sometimes over the top mannerisms, I mean, she does look like a star. She's got it just written all over her, like she totally belongs in the spot that she's in here right now. And you know, I am partial to longer title reigns, do you think Bayley really needs this win at Extreme Rules to solidify herself and her faction?
Tom, yeah, we didn't really get into predictions. What do you think?
I think that is one of the main reasons why it's a match where Bayley's shoulders are not going to be pinned to the mat. Because on one hand, yes, I do think that after such a long time away and after such a prominent return, a major signature win is all but necessary for this group. But if it's in the context of climbing a ladder, not to completely discredit a match that has a potential to be really, really excellent. I think that I would be surprised if I don't end up really liking what they're able to do with this match. I have faith in Bayley and Bianca here, but it doesn't have the visual of Bayley getting her shoulders pinned to the mat. So maybe I'm reaching there, but that's kind of how I'm viewing that.
All right, David, I appreciate your call, as always.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, we'll keep rolling here, and you can join us, by the way, 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 on your keypad. All right, Brad from New York, you are up next. Thanks for calling. What's your mind about Raw tonight?
Hey, Wade. Hey, Tom. So I thought this was a really great episode, like top to bottom. I really didn't think there was anything in it that was not entertaining, but I just finished watching. I was behind on DVR a little bit, and just a few observations. I haven't read anything from anyone or seen anything, but I really was, during the Alexa Bliss segments, if you notice, there was quite a few QR codes. There was two QR codes, and they both came up in segments with Alexa Bliss. I'm a little tired of all this QR code stuff, but also during her match, there was about 15 Lily dolls, if you look, that were behind the ring throughout this entire match. And, you know, I've seen Alexa Bliss matches since she's, you know, come back and everything, and yeah, you know, the Lily doll's always in her hand, but you never see that many in the crowd. I mean, they were everywhere, almost like they were strategically planted behind the ring. There was a guy in a Bray Wyatt mask. Really, I only noticed him during Alexa's match and during that whole part with the contract signing and then into Alexa's match. But I am pretty sure that everyone thinks, you know, Bray Wyatt is coming back at Extreme Rules. I'm pretty sure that he's going to come back not during the Edge match, not during the Karrion Kross match, but I think he's going to come back during the Bianca Belair-Bailey match with Alexa there at ringside. It's just strange to me that Alexa did main event again tonight. It almost seems like they're subtly building for something with Alexa that's going to be bigger than what this is now. and a lot bigger than what this is now. And I just think, you know, even when Bailey was on top of the ladder, when they went to a wide shot of the camera, there was a white rabbit there. A lot of clues in that final match that kind of led me to believe that. I'd like to hear your – I had a couple other quick things, but I don't know.
Yeah,
did you guys notice any of that?
We'll come back
stuff? Here. A lot of clues. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and there was a fan holding up a sign that said White Rabbit, kind of misspelled – well, I don't know, intentionally, I guess, misspelled both things. Or called it Wyatt Rabbit, W-Y-Y-T-R-A-B-A-T.
Yeah.
As part of sort of the background, and that might have been part of it or not. I mean, we had some things that felt planted. The QR code, just for people who didn't see the show, Javier did research on this. I'll just read what he emailed because he won't be able to call in tonight. And he said, give Tom my regrets. He won't be able to call in.
That's all right. He's going to beat me to it because I actually researched it as well. So Javier found a way to leave me with the bones to pick.
Well, you can either correct him or add details or congratulate him
okay.
for picking up on more. So Javier said the code showing us Candace walk past the Bel Air group, linked to a picture of a painting of Delilah preparing to cut Samson's hair, a reference to Bliss's betrayal of the Fiend, maybe. Beneath that is an image that looked like a magic picture. I've never gotten those to work. I did once in my life. I was so happy, but I have a dominant eye, and I don't really see, like, those don't, like, form the image with me because one eye is clear and the other isn't. He says, if you tap the space between, a red bar appears with some symbols, and I'm too tired to even attempt to decode it. Tapping the picture itself revealed WWE.com/39912N. I entered the URL as is, but it took me to their parts unknown error page. So there we have it. Tom, do you want to add anything to that, or did Javier pick up on things you did?
Honestly, there were so many details here. And I'll say, to this point, I have thought, particularly with the Jefferson Airplane song, which, you know, I would say, ooh, I'm a fan of that song, but I think everybody is. It's a really popular and good song. But especially that it's just Grace Slick's vocals is really haunting. But the whole QR code thing, I think it's really neat that they are doing it. And if you want to follow the rabbit down the rabbit hole, you can. I have chosen to just let other people do that, and maybe I'll read about it after the fact and be like, oh, okay, neat. This was the first night that I was like, oh, okay, let me see what I can find here. And there, so I don't know if all of them have been this detailed, but there were so many different facets to this that I'm not even going to go like too deep on like, well, this code led to this and this code led to this. But ultimately what we ended up with, one URL led to a new code. Of course, there was the Samson and Delilah thing, and my interpretation was the exact same as Javier's. But one new code, if you Googled the code, it ended up being the SKU for a brand of milk called White Rabbit, which is just sort of – just leads in a circle. I'm not sure if that ended up leading to anything else. The hidden – symbols in the middle are from, and if you use the Predator translation, it translates to a quote from Dante's Inferno, which is the same quote that Bray had written on his wall in the Firefly Funhouse. Also, Samson and Delilah is something that that Wyndham Rotunda has tweeted about in the past. So this all seems. I know we're deep enough into it that we. It's easy to want to be like, well, what if it isn't Bray? What if it's somebody else? But all of this feels like it's from the mind of Wyndham Rotunda, and there are specific connections like that. There was also, and I honestly didn't know where this came from, but I saw it as I was looking for what other people might have found. There was a binary code that if you translated the binary, it spelled out Gacy. And so that's got a bunch of people up in arms going like, oh, my God, if after all this is just going to be a freaking Joe Gacy call-up. And, hey, I'm right there with you. I don't have many kind things to say about that talent on NXT. But maybe it just means, like some of these others have meant, that there will be a new QR code on NXT this time during Joe Gacy's segment.
Or Gacy's part of the Wyatt group.
Oh, that – yeah, that would be really obvious, but it could be. Yeah. And then I when I say obvious, I mean like an obvious use of the Joe Gacy character. But anyway, the other couple of things, and these, I think these had to do with the Magic Eye puzzle, which actually I am super good at. I can just like, let's see, I've got it up right now. Yeah, I can just, like in a snap of my fingers, I can cross my eyes to make it happen. Yeah, those led to...
I'm just going
to
stare at my phone for the rest of the show and try to get this out. I'm jealous.
I guess I didn't quite figure that one out myself, but other people said that it led to the coordinates of the Wells Fargo Center where Extreme Rules is taking place, and that like another element of it somewhere in there also had the date of the Extreme Rules show. I don't want to write off the idea that maybe Extreme Rules, although I'm totally of the mind that a return is more likely to happen while Alexa Bliss is out there, perhaps post-match while she's still in the ring or something. But this could just be another hint. And then maybe something, you know, one of my thoughts was like, oh, well, maybe they'll do something during the DX segment because this is such a major thing that they want eyeballs on it. And that's the most heavily promoted thing on the most widely viewed cable show right now. So that's a thought. Oh, and see, I've talked about this so much, but I would be remiss not to take the opportunity to mention I looked up, you know, I missed it since I was out of power and everything, but the SmackDown White Rabbit thing from last week apparently had something that translated to Azazel Reborn or Azazel Returns. And I personally thought that was cool because I years and years ago, I wrote a screenplay where the demon Azazel was the antagonist. So I knew a little bit about it, and Azazel has to do with the legend of scapegoats. And so I started to think, like, well, I wonder if the Lily doll is supposed to be the scapegoat. And the idea is that, of course, you put your sins on the goat and you send it off into the desert and it goes to Azazel. Or I think there are other versions of the telling where the sins themselves actually become Azazel. But I didn't know if that might relate to Lily. Also, this will actually be my last point, I noticed that there was I don't know if you could call it graffiti. It almost looked like moisture that had yet to dry. But when Alexa was standing backstage after the contract signing, I think it was, yes, it was after the contract signing, there was a sort of like rabbit skull-looking symbol on the wall right behind her.
All right, so while you've been talking, I'm staring at this. It looks like the back of a contract to me.
I'm glad I gave you enough of a chance with all my yammering, but long story short, so, they are being very elaborate with this. So maybe it was a coincidence that a bunch of people brought Lily dolls to the show, but I also, you know, with everything else they're doing, I wouldn't be surprised if they handed some out.
So when you stare at this, back to this, Tom, what do you, do you see a rabbit? What do you see?
It's a code that reads MTA4MJI equals.
So this thing that looks like the back of a playing card says all that?
Yeah.
Oh, that's crazy. Okay, well, I give up then. I started seeing like rabbits, so I'm just, my mind making stuff up. All right. Cool. Brad, back to you. Oh, I know what I was going to say. You know, we talked at the top of the show, before I throw it back to you, Brad, about what match might be last. And a big determinant. You know, we sat here and logically went over this, and I've done this before with Sam Roberts on our pay-per-view previews for some of the bigger shows in recent years. The last match sometimes has to do with the finish or an angle after the finish. So if Bray Wyatt is going to return and it's in one of the matches, it's going to be tied to one of the matches, especially the ladder match, then that match will be last. You're not going to try to – well, I shouldn't say for sure, but my thinking is they're not going to try to have something have to follow the payoff to the QR codes and everything going on with Winner Rotunda.
Right, and of course that would also diminish him by having something go on after his return.
Yeah, yep. All right, Brad, back to you.
Yeah, I mean, not to continue to go on about this, but, you know, I was wondering if maybe, you know, the Bray Wyatt appearance will lead to Bayley's team losing, you know, in some way where Alexa gets some sort of strength from it or some sort of something to help. Who the hell knows? But regardless of all of that stuff, and I do think it's going to be with the Alexa match. That's where the Bayley match. That's where the return is going to happen. But we'll see. I loved how Riddle was using the Seth Rollins stuff from the Ariel Helwani interview against him in that promo that he was doing when they were, you know, not allowed to touch each other, but how he was saying, oh, you're second fiddle to Roman, you're second fiddle to Becky, you're never going to be the top guy, whatever he was saying. And then he brought up, I mean, it was just really well done, kind of like merging reality and you know, the WWE in-ring world and the promos and everything, just weaving it all together was really well done, I thought, and I really loved that. And another point just on Edge and his backstage
promo. Can you pause on that, Brad? Yeah.
Sure.
I want to ask Tom this about the Riddle Seth thing, because two things. One, I think, and I wrote this, I think, last week, I want to see a middle ground between dopey, Randy Orton obsessed Riddle and this Riddle. And I get the feud calls for this tone, but I hope after this feud, they find a middle ground where he's not dopey and not a serious person, you know, like his old character, but some of the charm and the fun is gone. And I think, you know, when we point at, you know, why is WWE doing well compared to a year ago? Like, there's been a lot of things that have been going well and a lot of things get credit. I don't know that the Riddle character gets enough credit, in part because it's a bit polarizing, because I think some people think it's too dopey and too just dim-witted. But it was fun. He was likable. He was sort of adorable even at times in terms of his character and how he reacted to things, and there's sort of an innocence. And that's missing. And that leads me to my second point, which is I know some people get enamored with bringing reality into storylines on television. And I say this all the time. If reality is the best story you can tell, then by all means tell it, because it's the best story you can tell, and it will get a little something extra from a certain part of the crowd that likes that gets something out of something on TV that's fictional being based or amplified by reality. That doesn't do a lot for me personally any more than if I'm watching a scripted TV series and two characters are going at it in the show and they're enemies and I hear they're really enemies in real life. It doesn't really make the show better or worse for me. It's like, whatever, that's a different world. But I don't think Seth should be bringing up that Riddle has a restraining order that prevents him from seeing his kids, because that makes me think not, oh, how mean of Seth to bring it up, but what in the hell did Riddle do that prevents him from being able to see his kids? I think you're bringing up a topic that makes people uncomfortable and makes people think, I don't know for sure what happened there, but it doesn't sound good. And it's possible Riddle did something really bad to lead to that situation. And Riddle doesn't push back on it. He just sort of changes the subject. Tom, your thoughts on that in particular, and anything else Brad said about that?
Yeah. To your first point, of course, we know Riddle has the dial that he can set somewhere in the middle, because we saw it in MLW, we saw it in NXT. So he's got that for sure. And you know, I'm in favor of Matt having a first name, but of course a lot of the reporting around the reasoning for him switching to just Riddle was so when people Googled it, the legal situation did not come up. So, you know, and WWE has taken that strategy before with, you know, like, oh, well, we're going to have our fans Googling this name. Let's try let's try to control what the search results are going to be and have them lead to us more and to the character more. Although I wouldn't have, you know, stood on a stump and shouted it to everybody, I was in favor of this prior to their Clash at the Castle match, because that's what it was, right? I think, yeah, the Clash at the Castle match, because they really didn't have a reason to hate each other, and that added that just poured a bunch of gasoline on a situation that didn't have much of a spark, and so it exploded for the purposes of that match. I would be I might have suggested, if I was in the room, leaving it at that and not continuing to bring it up for the exact reasons that you're mentioning, because we want to be on, especially with Rollins. I don't know if I want to say that Rollins is cool. I don't think that's how I would describe his character, but he's entertaining. Rollins is an entertaining character right now. So there's a part of us as audience members that like what he's doing, but we want to be on Riddle's side and they want us to be on Riddle's side. So bringing that up just plants that back in back in my mind, like, oh yeah, there was, you know, something unsavory in his past that I'm now being reminded of. But I'll compliment, Brad, you brought up the references to the Helwani interview, which I appreciate. I thought it was brilliant of Riddle after this particular segment had circumvented Rollins getting an entrance where everybody was going to sing along with him by starting it with the sneak attack on Lashley and then Ali. I thought it was brilliant by Riddle to say that the fans are going to start chanting bro instead of oh to go along with Seth Rollins' song. And, you know, we probably won't be able to tell the difference all that much, but the fact that now, it's we've seen this tactic in other situations where the babyface will start a chant that drives the heel crazy. But now this thing that Rollins really likes, hearing the crowd sing, he doesn't want them to sing because he thinks they're saying bro. And that's just, I think that's just...
He should throw a Bobby fit. Like, stop saying bro. It's oh, not bro. Even if they're singing, oh,
yeah.
He should throw a fit and claim they're saying bro, because that will spark fans to actually then sing with bro.
Exactly. So I think that right there was a stroke of brilliance.
How does that follow Seth around after the Riddle feud is done? You know, people keep singing the song. Are they going to keep doing bro? Although I thought the St. Paul crowd was a little slow on the bro. It took him a little while to coordinate it. It took Seth a little bit of effort to get that, or Riddle a little bit of effort to get it kind of rolling. So maybe it's not quite, doesn't roll out the tongue as much. So I still think this is it's not a sure thing to work, but I really like the idea.
Yeah.
Brad, back to you.
Yeah. Well, Seth, Riddle didn't sing it right. Also, he had to go bro. He was doing bro. He wasn't singing right, but I agree. It was really brilliant. And one thing really quick on I'll just get through this quickly. I don't want to make you have to stop every time. But on Edge, that backstage segment where he was talking about, he was talking about his family a lot. And, I'll never say I quit. I can't see him saying I quit, and I definitely can't see Finn Balor saying I quit either. So I think that was a lot of foreshadowing towards Beth Phoenix being in that match and Judgment Day doing something during the match, like Rhea Ripley's doing something to her that is so horrible that he has to say I quit to make it stop. And I do think that's the way that match is going to end. I'm not 100% sure, but just the fact that he was bringing up his family so much in that little backstage promo made me kind of think that that's the way that match is going to kind of turn out. Who knows? With Lashley and Seth, I assume that – I guess Lashley is Seth's next feud. And I'm just wondering if you guys do see that potentially resulting in a title for Seth, especially after what, was being said. Oh, you don't have a belt. You never have a belt tonight with Riddle and what was said in the Helwani interview. So just curious really quickly your thoughts on whether that is a possibility. I mean, I guess it is. And lastly, Theory was, in my opinion, I don't know if anyone else thinks this, but I do. I thought he was so damn funny tonight on the mic, on the commentary. He was, to me, utterly hilarious. I mean, he was saying, all day academy and, I'm not the type to hit someone in the back. I say it right to their face. He was so arrogant and such an unbelievable pompous ass tonight that but he was just really smooth with it too. I just thought he was just really, really good. And it just shows you, kind of the type of potential he has being so young and that he can, be that funny, and I just think he's got a great sense of humor, and I totally agree with you, Wade, the humor on Riddle, it needs to come back in some way. It can't always be angry Riddle. It needs to have a mix of serious and also goofy and, you know, kind of, you know, out there and almost stoned Riddle too. So I really appreciate the time tonight, guys, and thanks again, and really great to speak with you both.
Great, Brad. Thanks. Great topics. Good launching pad for a few discussion points. As far as Edge goes, I think that's a good point. He brings up that if, you know, Beth were ringside, I could see Beth throwing in the towel or saying, I would roll my eyes and groan, but I could see them having Beth say, I quit, or throw in the towel if Edge refused to, if things got too brutal. I just throw that out there as like something to brace yourself for the possibility of, because he did inject her into the promo. I don't think that's likely, but I'm just saying that's something maybe they were hinting at. Kind of like with I didn't want to think bad things about Riddle in the Seth feud and have my mind go to, what did you do to get a restraining order if you can't see your own kids? I thought Edge made almost too compelling of a case about how much being in his late 40s as an active wrestler after all those years off is taking a toll on him physically and his wife and how she looks at him and his daughters. I started thinking, I feel like I'm an accessory to the downfall of his happy household by being rooting for him and cheering him on. Like, there just comes a point where like, okay, Edge, maybe we shouldn't be cheering for you to fight your battles anymore if it's this difficult. And if it's more and more difficult every month that goes by, every match that goes by, and your daughters are scared and your wife is worried for you. I almost thought it was too convincing, and I'm like, okay, I just Edge, go ahead and retire and raise your kids and be a good husband again. There's a whole life out there for you, so you don't just fall to pieces. I don't know how many people felt that way watching it, but it was almost too convincing. So I'm going to throw those couple talking points out there. Tom, on the Edge thing first, and then if you want, you can go into Lashley, Seth, and I'm definitely curious for your take on Theory's progress on the main roster compared to what you saw from him in NXT.
We definitely don't want Edge to become Randy the Ram, but
right.
I guess from where I'm sitting, I am taking it as like, this is what Edge wants. Like, he's the one that wanted it. He's the one who wants to keep on doing it. It means something to him. So even if we are involved because we're cheering him, he would be doing it anyway is the... So I, all of that detail didn't really cross my mind, although you may have a point.
It's like Darby Allin will destroy himself and put himself at great physical risk and end up like Dynamite Kid by age 40, whether he's got a camera pointed at him or not. So we might as well just pay
right.
Him to see him. I mean, you know, there is sort of that. And I mean, it almost is true with Darby. You know, he would be doing this stuff anyway, so it's not like Tony Khan should be blamed for paying him to do it and making money off of him. But there, that's what came to mind when you said that. It's like, yeah, we can kind of talk ourselves into that, but if someone gets paid to do something and you're cheering them to do it, there's a little bit of culpability.
And of course, Edge's performance was very good, as it usually is here, but I do feel that he tipped the cap of this match angle too much. I was going into this, into tonight already thinking that his family would probably be involved somehow. Not only does that feel like the Judgment Day's MO, but it feels like, okay, why are they going with an I quit stipulation? Why is that the one that was picked? Eventually Edge has got to start putting people over rather than always beating them. People, specifically Judgment Day members. So what's going to happen? So I was already thinking that like it's going to be, honestly, I was thinking maybe even the children, and I'm still kind of thinking that Beth definitely more likely, but maybe they're at ringside. Maybe they, even though they just did it a few months ago with Seth, what feels like only a few months ago anyway, do something where, you know, Rhea's not at the show, but oh, she's in North Carolina. You know, something along those lines. So I was already thinking that. And then Edge brought up his family and then went as far as to say, like, well, and talked about how much they mean to him, and then went as far as to say, and I wrote down the exact quote, "You cannot physically hurt me enough to make me say I quit." And he really put the emphasis on physically. You cannot physically hurt me enough to make me say I quit. And I'm just thinking, all right, yeah. In the video that plays before the entrances for this match, we're going to hear that quote again. And this, you know, this is really the tip off. And I think that, you know, Brad's calling in about it. And since I happens to be online looking up White Rabbit stuff at the time, when Edge said that, I started to see the tweets come in about people with that exact same theory. So I do think that I was trying to think of a rabbit thing. The cat has been let out of the bag a little bit too much. The rabbit's out of the hat.
Yes. Theory. Tom, how does Theory's performances compare to what he did in NXT? Is he overachieving? Tom, can you hear me, Tom? Internet fade out something? Did I do something? Hang on, people. Everyone else? Let's see what's happening here. All right. Well, let's go to our next call instead here as we try to work through any technical issues. And because it shows Tom is still here. Oh, now he dropped. Let's see if Tom can be brought back. Hold on, people. Calling Tom. Tom's internet goes out. Still calling, Tom. Still calling. Patch him back in. Not seeing him show up. Let's move next to Ryan in Cumberland, Maryland. Ryan, welcome to the show. Your thoughts on Raw?
My first question is on Dominic Mysterio. I don't know if you caught that, but when the promo was going on, the fans were chanting, "He's your daddy," and Dominic responded to the question. So a wrestler is allowed to improv on their promos since Triple H has taken over. So no, Vince was more on like the scripted promo, so is it going back to more of the freestyle promo with Triple H?
I don't know that there's a big difference. I think if the crowd is interjecting a chant that the TV audience is hearing, that wrestlers are absolutely allowed to chime in and participate, or I should say participate, but react specifically to that. So I don't think that's any different, Ryan. I think that that freedom has always been there. I mean, there's a little bit more freedom on promos, I've anecdotally heard, since Paul Levesque took over the booking. But a wrestler reacting to a crowd, I just think is pretty normal. And, yeah, I wouldn't consider this an exception that even jumped out to me, because I think Dominic has reacted before to – "Who's your daddy?" And Dominic made it clear, you know, my Ray is not to answer your question. Did you like that moment, Tom, in the Dominic segment, his reacting to the crowd? And I felt like there were two things. One, a wrestler who was it that said they're going to kill their opponent?
That was Riddle.
Yep. So I didn't like that. And I didn't like hate. I defended the emotions between Dominic and Ray and the father-son dynamic. I know in my life and my son's life where there's friends who have real issues with their parents and you know, people who have disowned their parents or, you know, become estranged from them. You can say, well, you know, what happened to Dominic and Ray doesn't match the things that you hear in real life. But I think they're tapping into something that a lot of people can relate to. But I don't think people buy that Dominic hates Ray. I feel like the word hate in general is overused in life, and it should be reserved for very extreme things. I think it's a powerful word. And I believe that in wrestling, same thing with I'm going to kill you, as Scott Hall told me in a Torch talk, you know, 15 years ago now. Scott's like, no, you're not. No, you're not. You know, nobody thinks you're going to kill anybody. This is pro wrestling. Why would you say you're going to do something that everybody watching knows you're actually not going to do? So anyway, I threw that in there in the context of the Dominic question. But yeah, Ryan bringing up, you know, that Dominic sort of winged it based on the crowd reaction, and if that's something we see more of now under Paul Levesque than we did with Vince.
Yeah, it would have been so much easier for Riddle to just say knock out, and it would have put over the stipulation of the match, and it would have just come off as yes, more believable. And you know, I liked Dominic's demeanor during that opening segment. I thought that he was selling that well, and just that brief bit of verbiage, because I was liking the rest of the package, I wanted to try to find a reason to excuse that. And I was thinking like, oh, well, I guess I remember being younger and, you know, not saying, you know, understanding that hate is indeed an overused term and trying not to use it much myself. But when I was in an argument with my dad, maybe I would say, I hate you, because I thought that it would get under his skin. You know, so I was trying to forgive it. But you're absolutely right that when he said it, it did not sound believable. And it feels like maybe it's with Ray trying to reach out so much and trying to be there and trying to talk to Dominic, maybe Dom just shutting down and not having anything at all to say would be the play.
Yeah, yep. All right, Ryan, back to you for your next topic.
My second question is on D-Generation X. Which wrestler out of the group could you possibly see doing a farewell match? You know, X-Pac said he really wants to do one, like a big one, like Royal Rumble. Could we even see, like, Shawn Michaels come back? He's maybe disappointed in that last match that he had, and maybe do like a Royal Rumble, since it's in San Antonio, I believe, next year, which is his hometown.
I haven't heard any rumors of Michaels wanting to come back. He doesn't strike me as somebody who would want to, because of the pride in how good he was. You know, I think he's different than, say, Ric Flair in that way. I think Sean Waltman is probably the most likely to come back. I think with Paul Levesque in charge, it seems like the odds of that would go up compared to Vince McMahon, although Sean had a good relationship with both Vince and Hunter over the years. But, you know, Hunter is a contemporary of his, and they're only a few years apart in age, and they're close friends. It's less of a boss-employee relationship. So it almost, you know, you could see a personal favor being called in either direction. Hunter going, hey, we could use a little something extra, Sean. You feeling like you're in shape, or vice versa. Sean going, I really want one more match. And I think it'll be worth it. So that would be my pick. Tom, how about you?
Yeah, I think that's the default pick. You know, I remember a pretty bad injury he suffered a few years ago, and Sean Waltman, that is. And I'm not sure how much wrestling he's done since then. But I think that does end up being my default pick, because of the four that they are advertising, Road Dogg is absolutely not in shape for that anymore. And Michaels, I mean, it took a Saudi Arabia paycheck to get him back in a tag match, a novelty tag match. Whereas when he was still, I think it was just when he was starting to dip his toe. I think he was still living in Texas, and he was just starting to dip his toe into a little bit of involvement with NXT. I think that's where it lands on the timeline. They started to tease. He was the special referee in a match. I think it took place at Red Rocks between Drew McIntyre and Adam Cole. And they teased a match between Michaels and Cole, which, you know, people would keep on talking about for years that was a possibility. And if he didn't lace back up for a match with Adam Cole, I
Yeah, they would have to really cook something up, and I don't know if I see it for Michaels. I think that Waltman is, while still very unlikely per my own estimation, not really knowing too much about his personal situation, where his head is at regarding that, I think he's by default the pick of the bunch.
Ryan, you have a third item for us.
Yes, with Raw being in St. Paul, Minnesota, do you feel Raw is hotter than the AWA was in its peak when Nick Bockwinkel and Bobby Heenan were the main act, or do you think they're pretty equal?
The AWA at its peak was bigger. They were selling out buildings, and XL Energy Center wasn't sold out tonight. AWA was a hometown, a promotion based here, and everything that was happening in the AWA on their big shows, either at the St. Paul Civic Center or the Minneapolis Auditorium, would make the local news that night. Vern Gagne was a celebrity here at the level of Tom Brady in, whatever NFL city he's been playing in over the years, either New England area or Tampa. I mean, he was a big deal here. AWA, a much bigger deal. People see WWE as a international touring conglomerate or, big-time company. And the AWA was a major league, but people knew that it was based here. And it was a much bigger part of the local fabric as opposed to, a concert coming through where, the band's playing in a lot of cities. So AWA, much bigger in a local way. That said, WWE is drawing nice crowds. AW drew nice crowds here. So, it's a good, solid wrestling market right now, but I wouldn't call it red hot, where they're coming here more often than the average city. All right, anything else?
That's all I have for you. Thanks for taking the call.
Right. Absolutely. Thanks, Ryan. Before I go further with any calls, I want to bring in some emails here. And I want to bring the first email up here is Justin, who said, hello, fellas, few thoughts from tonight's show. Number one, Alexa Bliss in the main event 2 out of the last 3 weeks and being protected has to be leading to something, right? This is the most inconsistent she's been used since returning in May. What could this be leading to? Team back up with Bray or her eventual turning heel on Bianca? Or, Tom, I would introduce the thought of both.
Yes, exactly. Yes, yeah. Both. Yeah. And you've got Candice LeRae right there to slide into her spot.
Absolutely. What do you think of what Bliss has been doing in the ring, just work-wise? Is she someone who's her character is going to be the primary reason to be intrigued with her, or is she doing well enough in the ring with her work that it passes main event muster?
My answer, again, is both, and that's how I've always felt about Bliss. I mean, maybe not so much during the cheerleader pixie days from 8 years ago, which she is another act that is becoming slightly prominent isn't the word for what Alexa Bliss was on NXT, but she is showing up more on NXT 8 years ago. And one of the things that is, I always liked her, but one of the things that's surprising me in my analysis on 8 years back on VIP is that she really was that athletic and dynamic. Maybe that's a bit of an overstatement, but she was that athletic right out of the gate, and it's very recognizable compared to the Alexa Bliss that we get today. So I've always enjoyed what Alexa can do between the bells, but she is such a strong character actor, regardless of which version of her character she's playing, that always is going to be the primary focus of what she's doing. And I think what we've been getting lately is more of a vanilla version of her. Deliberately might not be the way to put it. I think it's just because they know that there's something else. There's another page that they're going to turn soon. So it's almost not worth the effort to really add too many layers to this one. There's already the intrigue of the White Rabbit stuff showing up. So Alexa just kind of being present and doing her thing, without too much further complexity is sufficient for the time being.
Yeah. Yep. All right. Number two, the Rollins and Riddle stuff has been excellent. Best feud of Riddle's career in NXT or main roster, and Rollins' work in 2022 altogether has been his best work in years and years. Looking forward to the match on Saturday and Rollins winning the U.S. title. couple days later on Raw. So do you agree with that? It's the best feud of Riddle's career in NXT or main roster? And is Rollins' work the best we've seen in years from him?
I liked what Riddle did with Timothy Thatcher, which also culminated in a fight pit match, the first fight pit match, which we saw clips of tonight. Funny, tangentially, in those clips. I thought that was a good video package, but I was like, oh, man, what are they going to do here? Because there have only been two of them. Neither of them happened with a crowd, and two of them had Timothy Thatcher in them. You know, it was just Tommaso Ciampa and Matt Riddle as the other two guys. So, but they... The shots that they picked and the filter they put on them, I thought it gave it an interesting, even though they weren't coming right out and saying like, oh, this is an underground match and this is a rare match that only gets pulled out every once in a while. Just the fact that there wasn't a crowd and it was happening in a small little room, I think made it seem interesting and made it seem more taboo. Like, oh man, this must be serious if Matt Riddle wanted to challenge Rollins to this exact match. But yeah, I think the Thatcher match was my favorite of Riddle's, and the email predicts that Riddle is going to win the United States Championship.
Yes, he said he's
okay.
He's looking for Rollins winning the U.S. title next week on Raw because they hyped the Lashley Rollins.
Okay,
Rollins set that up. Yeah,
because I could and me mishearing that, I now like what I misheard better, even though, yes, we've already got that match booked for the season premiere next week. But if Riddle were to somehow get involved, even though the fight pit is presumably the blow-off of that particular feud, I would much rather see the United States title on Riddle, because I feel like Seth, as a character without the United States Championship, no disrespect to Bobby Lashley holding it, I think his reign has been engaging enough, you know, relative to what Bobby Lashley is capable of without a mouthpiece. You know, I've been happy with what Lashley has been doing with it. But I don't really want to see Rollins with that particular title right now. I think I would rather see Rollins involved in personal feuds or, you know, as I continually say on this program, trying to claw his way back to a Roman Reigns match. So if Riddle were to horn in some kind of way and sneak away with the belt, that would suit me better as a viewer.
And he says, last but not least, Chad freaking Gable. This guy is incredible. Even in defeat, I find myself wanting more Gable. He's capable of so much more as a single star, but I understand he's in a specific role at the moment. I'm really looking forward to Extreme Rules this weekend. Thanks, guys, as always. Gable is one of my favorite performers right now. I lamented him not having a speaking role last week. He's, you know, you don't want to overexpose him or put him out there when you don't have material for him, but he's just gold. And the fact that he can go in there and have a really credible match with anybody, even though his character isn't even knocking on the door being a main eventer, but he's so good and so entertaining, you can put him in there and have, I think, viewers, hold the interest of viewers, even if they don't see him as a threat to win. He's being used, I think, really well. Would it be better to have protected him and utilized him at a higher level? Maybe, but there's something about his look and demeanor that might make that with viewers as much as him in this role. And I'm not ruling out someday him moving up a level after he just sort of, you know, builds up more of a track record with fans, entertaining them. It is sort of, you know, in modern wrestling that can kind of happen. But I'm pretty content with this, you know, Paul Levesque era giving him a longer amount of time in the ring and having good matches and just consistent mic time. He's kind of like Santino plus, I don't know, Kurt Angle or Daniel Bryan. I know there's a better example that's slipping me here of who he's kind of a blend between. But he's got, you know, he's good for comedy relief, but also really good work in the ring.
So. Yeah, and ever since he first started hitting the screen around 8 years ago, and he referenced that tonight, you know, the match that he genuinely was Braun's first match in front of a crowd.
That was some fun
and
footage.
That was from a house show in December 2014, so not quite exactly 8 years back, and definitely not something that we're going to be covering on our podcast, but it was neat that they were able to pull that. But ever since back then, he's always had like a dweeby, geeky side of his character, and never before have I enjoyed it to the extent that I enjoy him saying, oh, thank you. I absolutely get a kick out of that. And like tonight when he was all beat up and he said it, you know, just all out of breath and with a different intonation, that was very amusing. But yeah, in the ring, I am somewhat guilty of taking Chad Gable for granted over the years. And I'm not going to say that like, oh, I've had some great revelation and now I think he's amazing. And of course, you know, he excels at what he does. But tonight in particular, I was, you know, more impressed by him than I usually am. I don't want to go as far as to say like, oh, it was better than some of his, like the NXT triple threat tag match that had so many near falls that had me biting my nails or whatever it may have been. But Braun Strowman is somebody whom I have enjoyed.
He's fast.
Oh yeah, just like every single other big guy that they bring in and they say that he's fast. I have enjoyed him as an attraction in years past, but I at a time when I was tweeting more and you know on the daily cast every week, I was to the level of reach that my voice had at the time, I was outspoken on the fact that I totally agreed with letting Braun go. He had gotten to a point where he was making a lot of money, and he had gotten to a point where he was making way more than he was worth anymore. They had more than exhausted the guy. He did not have a title run in him, and he still got a title run due to circumstance. I was totally in favor of letting him go at the time they let him go. He should have been happy with his run, but they've decided to call him back, and I'm not into it at all, and he has been very imprecise with his actions since his return in a way that just has me kind of startled for his opponents every time he knocks somebody over or throws them. And Chad Gable got a frickin' match out of the guy. I mean, I should probably rephrase that. Chad Gable had a match, and Braun just happened to be in the ring with him. This was actually it was a chicken salad situation, if people know the other side of that phrase that I won't say on this particular airwave. But, Gable really turned that into something. I was not looking forward to this segment or any segment that contemporary Braun Strowman is on, but Gable turned it into something, all right.
Yep. All right. Speaking of Gable, got an email from JB from Detroit who said, not that I'm surprised, but Chad Gable put on another spectacular performance tonight. He's been fantastic, both in-ring and as character, for a good while now, and I think the potential to improve actually even improves under Triple H, as Paul was clearly high on him in NXT and possibly sees him as more valuable than a comedy character as they move forward. While I really like what Alpha Academy is doing, what are the chances that they're possibly broken up and Gable's given an opportunity at the upper mid-card and even visiting the main event scene from time to time in the not too distant future? As always, love the show and go VIP. Tom, any thoughts on that?
There would really have to be the right coalescence of storyline there. I think that he's just spent too much time at this particular station to not need a major rehab project to get up to where, say, you know, like where we're saying Sami Zayn is, where still essential mid-carder. Yes, he's involved in a main event program, but essentially a mid-carder who we could easily see moving into a main event spot. I don't think Gable is there. And even if Chad Gable is a Paul Levesque guy, there are a lot of people who are. So at a certain point, you've just got to figure out where they slot, because not everybody can be at the top.
Moving on. Dave from Pompano Beach, Florida. Did I? Pompano?
Yeah.
Why do I think I'm saying that wrong suddenly? Hi, Wade and Tom. Although I think Rollins versus Lashley will be a good program, do you think they've just given away the results of the Rollins-Riddle match at Extreme Rules? They wouldn't have Seth lose to Riddle and then expect people to believe that he can beat Lashley, would they? Or is it okay to have Seth lose to Riddle because of the match style, being in favor of Riddle's MMA background? Or maybe Seth stomping Lashley was a one-off and I'm overthinking it. So that's part one of his email. Does advertising Seth Lashley next week, or Lashley calling out Seth and saying I'll defend against him next week, does that lean you more one way or the other as far as the finish goes? At Extreme Rules, I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's not the cleanest. I guess it leans – I mean, I was already leaning toward Riddle anyway, although to be fair – this was introduced as Riddle's style of match in NXT, and then he lost the first one, which is kind of the poetic way for that to go. But I do expect Riddle to essentially win the feud here. But I guess already advertising Rollins for a championship match on Monday, which I understand them wanting to, since it is the season premiere. And I know we say every year that that's a silly thing. Incidentally, I happen to see a season premiere promotion for Days of Our Lives recently. So I was like, oh, okay. So they do it too.
NFL's mid-season season premiere
right.
in 3 weeks.
I suppose it does lean me toward feeling like Rollins is that much more likely to lose at Extreme Rules because they've already got his next thing set up that is unrelated, which I guess the same could be said for a victory, but it just, if I paused and left dead air to think about it for a little while longer, there's surely a better way I could phrase it. But yeah, just I have the feeling that tips off more of a Rollins loss.
Yeah. The fact that Lashley was the one who kind of made the Seth match a thing, like I wouldn't say initiated the thought on it, but he validated or verified that he wanted it to happen and would see to it that it would happen. If I'm remembering the timeline of how it all played out on Raw, right, makes me feel like it's less essential Seth win, and it is more a transition, because it's not like Lashley, like, well, if you earn it with the win, you'll get a title shot. It's more, I just want to get my hands on you, and I'll put my title on the line to prove that I'm better
right.
than you. So, yeah, that works. Dave also says, did Daniel Cormier's video package make it seem like it was meant to be a surprise? The way he was talking, it sounded like he was announcing he was the ref, and he was informing the wrestlers of it for the first time. Like, they made the video, but then decided to announce it early, but still use the video. Either way, thanks for all the content. Everyone, go VIP. Thanks, Dave. Yeah, that was not smooth. They had to know what they had on tape with Cormier. But I wonder if they forgot the details or if Ariel Helwani broke the news. And this is one of those cases where they actually didn't like that he did it because it took away something that was meant to be a surprise. I haven't had a chance to kind of, try to connect dots on this and figure it out. But, yeah, Cormier's tone, Tom, I don't know how it struck you, struck me as, guess what, guys? This match calls for someone like me to be the referee, so how about it? As opposed to, yeah, as you all heard earlier in the show and as Errol reported earlier, I'm the right person for this job and I'm glad to have it.
Yeah, it definitely struck me that way as well. And he even said, oh, and if any of you people are wondering just who's on the screen right now, well, I'm blah, blah, blah. So it seems like something that may have been recorded like a week ago, like, oh, hey, we need you to hit these points. It's going to play during some segment that we haven't quite written out yet where the two of them are going to be arguing with one another. So you're cutting them off and saying, okay, enough of is enough. I'm going to, and even in that context, even if it hadn't been said ahead of time, just the energy of it was casual enough and random enough that he would show up on the screen to interrupt their interaction in the ring. I mean, that's awkward enough when somebody does it from backstage and they're looking into a camera lens. Very, very, very strange. But it absolutely struck me the same way. And they've had a close enough relationship with Helwani in recent weeks and months that I just wonder if, like, they did film the DC video, like, a week or however many days ago, and then they changed their mind and decided that it would be good to get some social media buzz, get a headline over the weekend. Let's just go ahead and announce this. And even though it might not be the cleanest thing when we do it on Raw, it'll still make enough sense in context that it's not the biggest deal in the world.
Yeah, and that's where I was on this. I didn't think it was the biggest deal in the world, but it wasn't great. It wasn't, yeah, it, it, felt like something didn't quite work out. It felt like Cormier just wasn't watching Raw, and if we're supposed to even live,
yes.
Just wasn't paying attention, and like, oh, I didn't know Arrow reported that. Okay.
Yeah, even when he's saying like, you know, we've been watching you guys for months, and we're sick of it. I'm like, I don't believe that you've been watching.
And I mean, he's a wrestling fan, but yeah, I think it needs to be established a little, like, it came across like I'm saying that because it's the right thing to say at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see. We'll read one more here. Dana from Irvington, New Jersey says, hey guys, I really enjoyed the pacing of the show tonight. I liked how the matches flowed one after another. Good mix of promos and matches. I found it interesting that Solo still won despite all the distractions by Jay and Sammy tonight. Do you guys think Roman will step in and pick a side soon? We haven't talked. I mean, the Bloodline was part of the show. I've been talking a lot about Sammy, a lot about Solo, a lot about the Usos. No Heyman, no Roman. But I think it's worth using this email as sort of a portal into talking a little bit more about what they did with Bloodline and Street Profits, with Dawkins in particular stepping up and facing Solo, and what Dana brought up about the finish. Tom, any thoughts on any of that? Tom, I can't hear you. I'm not sure if you muted or just had another case of the internet dropping. Are you there, Tom? Are you there, Tom? Can you hear me? Still not hearing you? Tom, are you there? A little bit. All right. Well, I'll reply first since we aren't hearing from Tom right now, Dana. I think Solo had to win. I mean, there's certain wrestlers who can, you know, you're quote protecting them by having them lose because of distractions. Solo Sikoa is not losing to anyone right now. And he's definitely not losing to the perceived weaker link of the Street Profits. This match was there to give Solo a showcase match. Showcase maybe is overstating, but you know, a 12-minute size, you know, significant TV match and a win over somebody who's got some equity with fans, not as a top guy. No one's going to think less of Angelo for losing to Solo. This just communicated to the fans, Solo Sikoa is still a level above Angelo Dawkins. You can't have Solo losing at this point, no matter what's going on at ringside. I enjoyed Sammy. We talked a little bit earlier in the show about Sammy yucking it up with Jimmy and Solo just sort of standing there stoically and Jay not enjoying at all that Sammy wasn't focused on the season premiere later in the week. So, we can make fun of the lack of roster split and differentiation at this point and how loose it is, but they are trying to get more from the Bloodline. On both Raw and SmackDown, because I think they see it as something that draws ratings, something that draws viewers, and they want it weaved into both shows. I'm kind of curious where we end up in a few months when it comes to the roster split, and really maybe even looking ahead all the way to like post-WrestleMania, if Paul Levesque drops it entirely or just kind of lets things sort themselves out a little bit and then has a draft and does a hard split. I just don't think we have a clear picture, at least from what we're seeing on TV, other than we know he doesn't have it super strict. I think the out right now is that the Usos are champs of both Raw and SmackDown, and so they can bring people with them who are part of their faction. But, and I guess was Solo ever established as firmly on one brand or the other? But I think the implication is if you don't have one of the major world titles that represent both brands or the unified belts, you are supposed to be on one show or the other. And they're certainly stretching that out as far as Solo goes. All right. Well, I'm not sure if Tom is going to be back with us, but I will sneak in one more call here because I said we'd go to emails for a while. We'll go to this is probably Tom now that I think about it. Tom, is this you?
Yes, I believe it is. Sorry, I guess the hurricane is not quite done with me yet.
I
thought
we were
the power injection issues, but...
So So yeah, Tom, we got you back by phone here as opposed to our normal internet connection. What do you make of the way that Solo and the Bloodline were used tonight opposite the Street Profits?
Oh, you know, I'll be brief. I agree with what you were just saying, especially with Montez in the boot. They're certainly not going to do anything major with the Profits right now. So Solo was always going to win. I'm just impressed with how strongly they're presenting Solo right now. They really are. If I were to have guessed at what his call up was going to look like, I would have said that he will be the little brother to the Usos in every way. That he will just be the third one that's also there. But the way that they're really putting him out there as a killer for the group and a guy that Roman can really rely on to have his back even when the Usos aren't around, I've been impressed with the strength of that presentation thus far.
Do you think Solo is a future WrestleMania main event opponent or SummerSlam opponent for Roman Reigns on a big show?
It's too early for me to say WrestleMania. As big as something like a SummerSlam, I'm even hesitating there. So, he's extremely talented, and he became very popular with the live crowd on NXT. So the potential is there for something to catch on, but I'm not sure if it's quite at that echelon. I'm certainly not seeing it there yet, but not for any tangible reason. I think he'll need to set himself apart a bit more, and the storyline's going to have to be right.
Who is more likely to end Roman Reigns' title reign than Solo Sikoa right now?
Repeat the last part of that. Which
wrestler do you think is more likely to beat Roman for the unified title if they go that route where someone just wins both belts at a big show? Is it Cody? Is it Seth? Is it Drew? Is it someone else? Like who? Because to me, Solo Sikoa has suddenly become sort of in the ensemble of a very short list, but I don't know that anyone is that much more likely than him to be the person to end the reign. Oh, and Sammy. Gotta throw Sammy in there too.
I think if we were ranking that list, he wouldn't be high up on it, but I think I would still even put Bron Breakker higher than Solo Sikoa on that particular list. I've been riding the Cody train in regard to who's going to beat Roman for a while, and I have not disembarked yet. I still think that is going to be Cody.
Yeah, fair enough. Tom, anything else from the show you want to bring up before we sign off?
I just wanted to mention that, it's not a major point, but I think it stood out to me that it seems a bit too early to be teasing Braun and Omos. I mean, I guess that's me not knowing where on the calendar they want that match to take place. It feels like a WrestleMania attraction. It feels like that's the stage that they would do that kind of thing on. But with two shows in a row now where they've sort of crossed paths in a kind of way, you know, tonight with Omos, watching Braun's match from backstage with MVP, looking up at Omos, trying to read, like, oh, what do you think of this guy? I don't know if maybe they're looking for the Royal Rumble as a way to keep one or the other of them out of the main match. But I don't know, just seems too early there. And I did want to mention that I thought it was nice that, I mean, I'm not sure if there have been any other, I don't think there have been any other real prolific wrestling passings since Levesque got control, but I thought it was nice that instead of just putting up a card without speaking about it, that commentary briefly spoke about Antonio Inoki and for as much as you can in the span of, you know, 20, 30 seconds, just tried to contextualize how significant a figure he was in wrestling rather than just, you know, putting up a picture and that being that.
I'm curious how Vince McMahon would have handled this differently, if at all.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Cool. Tom, thank you. Always a pleasure talking around with you.
Yeah, likewise, and thanks for tolerating the connection issues.
No one will know. I get to, you know, we post-produce, so no one will know anything. What are you talking about? Thanks, Tom. Thanks to our listeners, our emailers, our callers, And we'll be by tomorrow with the flagship over on the Blue Logo Show. So be sure you're subscribing to this, our Red Logo Show, and also our main podcast feed, the Wade Keller Wrestling Podcast, our Blue Logo Show. Search Wade Keller, subscribe to both, or visit pwtorch.com to find links to everything. And then Wednesday night, we'll be back with the Dynamite post show. So we'll talk to you then, too. Thanks, everybody.